books had a real gold, that was a real golden year for a lot of publishers. A lot of people reconnected with books. And I think this is the joy of running a creative business of your own, is that you get to choose. You know, you're making those decisions. The writing and getting it all down is, there's a place for that, which is actually that's where some of the stories come and you get into the flow.
Hello and welcome to the Common Creative Podcast. My name's Chris Meredith.
And my name's Paul Fairweather.
And we're on a mission to lift the lid on creativity in the workplace and beyond. And we have a very special guest for you.
Yes, today's guest is Miranda West. Miranda is the publisher of the Do Books. The Do Books are, I suppose, the book version of the Do Lectures. We had David Hyatt, who is the founder or the co-founder with his wife Claire, of the Do Lectures on the show 100th episode, so a few episodes ago. And yes, it's a fantastic story. She has been working with creatives over the last 10 or so years to create these 40 editions of the Do Books.
And yeah, some powerful insights on how to get the best out of creatives, how to work with creatives, and how to edit, how to direct creatives, if you like. So let's get her in, find out more about how to work with creatives.
Miranda West, welcome to the Common Creative Podcast.
Hello, very happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me on.
Thank you so much for joining us, Miranda. Great to have you on the show. Miranda, if you could bring us up to date, please. You're now the publisher of the books for the Do Lectures, and for people that aren't aware, the Do Lectures are a world-famous series of lectures based out of a shed in David Hyatt's farm in Wales, but some incredible speakers. And so tell us about your role as the publisher of the Do Lectures books.
Yeah, so that was an interesting one because I left Penguin Random House. We moved to Switzerland with the family, so I had to resign from that job. And then I thought, well, actually, what I'll do now is start something of my own. I hadn't heard of the Do Lectures. And I was starting to have, I had that sort of entrepreneurial itch to maybe do my own thing. A friend of mine sent me a link to a talk, and it was by Craig Modd, who was exploring that sort of very, this was back in 2010, something like that, about where a lot of the publishers were moving to digital and e-books. And that's what he was talking about. But I was thinking, as a commissioning editor, who is he and where is this? What's this talk? Because, you know, I'd been commissioning for Penguin and nonfiction, you know, sort of in this space, but I hadn't, TED Talks was very much up and running, you know, going great guns actually at that point. And I thought, what's this space? So I did some digging, you know, put on my detective hat, found the website, and I just thought, actually, this is great. I mean, I was born in Wales, actually, and it was this... And, you know, the talks were all held on David's farm in Wales, but it was sort of in a tent or a barn. I mean, originally they were in a tent, now they're in the cow barn. And I looked at the speakers, you know, about 50, 60%, I hadn't heard of them, which is, you know, in this day and age is quite something. So, you know, as you know, they do spend a lot of time researching speakers. So you're not just having these people that are sort of coming, doing the lecture circuit. You know, it's the people who are actually out there doing things and making change. And I kind of loved it. I thought, well, actually, this is what I'm all about, you know, I mean, and this is why I love publishing, because, you know, for me, books can really make a difference to people's lives. You know, it can put them on a different trajectory. So I sent an email. I had no idea what I was doing, but I sent an email to the info at address. Didn't know who was going to read it, if anyone was going to read it. And then I had a response from David, and I thought, oh, that's nice. They've got back to me. And then we had a probably Skype call back then. But anyway, we had a video conference call. And it was David and Claire, the co-founders, husband and wife, David, Claire Hyatt. And we had a really, you know, just a casual conversation about, you know, my experience, what I was thinking, because basically, in my email, I'd said, asked if they'd considered publishing books by their speakers. So I kind of pitched the idea, I guess. But I mean, with, you know, no expectation, didn't really know what I was getting into. And of course, David's an avid reader. He loves books as well. But also appreciated that, you know, he's a busy man and didn't have the time and the expertise really to start a publishing company, because it is a whole industry.
I'm dying to ask. I mean, you're an evangelist for books, and books, once there was no question about the role of books. We all need books, and our libraries filled with books, and schools and universities have books. Books equals knowledge, all that stuff. But now I think the role of books is being questioned. We've got TV and the internet and social media and other distractions. What do books offer?
I think, God, that's an interesting question. And I think actually, if I, you know, cast our minds back to the pandemic, books had a real gold, that was a real golden year for a lot of publishers. A lot of people reconnected with books. You know, it was kind of, I mean, I say it was golden year. I mean, it was horrendous for everybody. And, you know, people working around the clock. But one of the things, one of the plus sides, I suppose, or silver linings, was that a lot of people reconnected with reading and a love of reading, because they were at home. They got sick of TV. They got sick of the news, first of all. And it's that sort of, it's that one-on-one connection with an author, where they're always speaking to you directly, and you enter different worlds. You know, you have a different point of view, a different perspective. It's not information overload. You know, you do sort of have to read 200 odd pages, and you're transported. You know, and you have a completely different. You sometimes you're changed by the end of it, and it's like watching a great film.
So that's interesting. This idea that a book, would it be fair to say, it protects you from information overload? Because it's strange that technology hasn't found a better thing than a book. I think we're agreeing. And maybe it's that idea that that one-on-one connection with an author, that you consume the information at your own pace. Is that what's going on with a book with pages?
Yeah. I think it's very quiet as well. It's quite a sort of quiet, solitary activity when you're actually reading. You know.
Yeah, I think that's Miranda, I'm interested in a couple of things on this line of books. You know, you obviously got paperback or, you know, real books, or as my son would say, books in true life. You have Kindle and you have audio. I tend to read mostly on Kindle or on my phone, and I occasionally also download an audio book, particularly if it's a particularly long book. What I like, you know, and I've only read about half a dozen of the Do books, and they're rather, you know, they're short, they're quite digestible. And over the while, I've been, you know, trying to put a book together, and I have these editors going, "Oh, you need to have 50 or 70,000 words for a business book." And I go, "Oh God, you know, when I pick up a little book, I'm really relieved." what's your sort of view on the length of a book? Because all your books are quite easy to digest.
Yeah, so there's a whole strategy, if you like, behind our book. So when we started, I kind of thought, well, first and foremost, I want to publish the books for attendees at the Do lectures, because I thought that's where it's going to, you know, we'll be on brand, you know, we'll be fully aligned. You know, I didn't want to take the Do lectures off into this sort of weird space where, you know, the books were incredibly dense and, you know, had to wade through them. It's like War and Peace. I thought, okay, we've got a bunch of people here who are time poor. You know, they want to get on and do it. You know, they're all about ideas and positive change, making the world better. And all of those, they're into sustainability, the environment. They appreciate great design. You know, there's a love of outdoors and the natural world. So I kind of developed a profile, if you will, of the kind of person who's attracted to things like the Do lectures. Of course, I've just described a lot of people. You know, that extends far beyond the people that go to the Do lectures. But what I've always tried to do is to have that person in mind whenever I commission a book. Would they be interested in this? You know, do I think they'd be interested in this? So the length of the book and the look and feel of the book is kind of hinged on that, really. So it's okay, they want to have a lot of information in a short amount of time. They might want to read ebook, as you said, or audio. So we've always, right from the get-go, we've always done print and audio, so that there's the choice if people want to read on the move. And we want the books to enable people to go and do. That's the whole idea. You know, they, our strapline is books that inspire action and positive change. So it wouldn't, it would be slightly nonsensical if I was, the people who are advising you are right. The average length of a book is about 80,000 words, you know, so, and that's about 288 pages. But our books, and I think this is the joy of, you know, running a creative business of your own, is that you get to choose, you know, you're making those decisions. So it's like, I don't want to publish a book that's, most books that are 300 pages need editing, need a proper edit. And obviously a lot of what we do, the books aren't 20,000 words when they come in, you know, they're, so we spend a lot of time, and that's the craft, I suppose, of publishing and editing. You know, we'll edit it down so we've got every sentence, you know, we have our sort of guidelines, you know, every sentence counts, you know, every sentence has an idea. So, you know, all the information is distilled down. I mean, one of the first books we did was Do Story with Bobette Buster, who was slightly freaking out at the, because she started writing and very quickly got to about like 30, 40,000 words. Because, you know, here's somebody who's got, you know, nearly about four decades of working in Hollywood and being a script consultant, and she's worked with Pixar and had this incredible career crafting stories for some of the big, you know, production houses in the studios in America. And I was saying, I want all of that in 20,000 words. I want all of that in 100 pages. And that was, you know, and there's a real, well, first of all, it's a lot of work. But actually, it's satisfying work, because you're then working with an author to really like, okay, well, what's your, you know, we came up with 10 principles. You know, what are the core things, elements that have to go in every story, you know, to take it from good to great, you know, and then that's where, and then we got the structure of the book and the chapters, you know, and it was a piece of work for her and for me, if I'm honest. But, you know, by the end of it, we've, you know, we had a best-selling book. You know, and it go, it came out in 2013, and it's still sells 10 years later.
I really like it, because Chris and I both, you know, teach storytelling. So, but I think the point, I love the comment you made there about every sentence counts, and I'm assuming it never counts twice, because I think a lot of business books I read, you know, they're very verbose and they say the same thing over and over again, and not even in different ways. You know, and it's like, you know, unless you hear this message 10 times, you're not going to remember it. And that really frustrates me. So I love the sort of, you know, much more direct nature. And I also understand the work, because that, you know, that famous quote about, you know, was I apologize for the long letter. I didn't have time to write a short one. It does make a...
Or I always like the Ernest Hemingway write drunk, edit sober. Yeah, and also I assume, you know, the persona or person I was talking about, you know, the Do Lectures person, I also assume they're smart, you know, so I don't need to tell them 10 times. I don't need to give them the same idea 10 times. You know, they're going to get it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they're generally very smart and astute, and, you know, they want to, they get the idea, they want to move on to the next one. Yep. You know, so it's kind of not pandering to the reader as well, and... Yeah, assuming a certain level of intelligence on their part.
Tell you what I'm wondering is, if we all need editors, not just the people writing books or trying to capture an idea on the page, but when I teach storytelling and I'm speaking to business people, they tend to use, and one of the great failings of PowerPoint is there's nothing to stop you doing yet another chart. And so these poor people arrive with 500 charts that they've created for a 10-minute presentation or something, and... That kind of thing needs an editor. Anybody that wants clarity of communication needs an editor to get their, to hone their message. Is that true?
100%. No, 100%. I think publishers and certainly editors, there are some incredible editors in publishing houses all over the world. And those books and those authors that make the bestseller lists, they didn't look like, I mean, honestly, obviously, they didn't look like that when they were delivered. You know, there's a process, and it's a craft. And you're right. I mean, you know, I think if ever I was to do a book, it probably would be something about the role of the editor. But yeah, we all need life editors. Yeah.
Life editors, there you go.
Yeah. I mean, people do a wardrobe edit, don't they? You know?
Yes.
I mean, it's kind of, it's part, well, it's, I suppose, yeah, part curation. And so, yeah, so yeah, I'm all for the editor. I'm literally the cheerleader for the editor.
I had a journalist in a course I ran on storytelling, which terrified me, but anyway, it worked very well. But she contributed an editing idea to the group, which was this. She said, when you write, write drunk. When you edit, edit sober. And I thought it was really good. The idea is, let it go. When you're writing, you want to be really creative. Don't worry too much. So my question to you is, what makes great editing? That's my question.
Well, I'm quite ruthless as an editor. I mean, I think definitely the writer has a role and actually should, you know, edit, I don't know, three times or whatever, really, before the manuscript comes through. Sometimes the manuscript comes to me and it's, you know, it's sort of very much a first draft. But just be ruthless. You know, you're constantly asking yourself, have I already said this? Am I just saying this but in a different way? You know, maybe you don't have the confidence to just sort of just land the idea and move on. You know, so I think it's just constantly asking yourself. But the, you know, the writing and getting it all down is, there's a place for that, which is actually that's where some of the stories come and you get into the flow. And actually that's when the ideas all come out. But then the process of honing that and thinking, and actually that also comes down to having a reader in mind. So a lot of writers get into the zone and there's a lot of sort of ego there. It's kind of like, I've done this and I've done that and now I'm going to tell you about this. I always, as the editor, will have the reader in my mind. Who's going to spend the time reading this? What are they going to get out of it? Why should they care? You know, there are a lot of books that come out every year, you know, and actually one of the notes I sort of made for this podcast was, you know, how do you stand out in an industry that is by definition a creative industry? You know, all the publishers are creative. We're kind of making and selling creativity in a way.
Yeah.
So how do you stand out? But yeah, the reader is key. And actually, once you get over that and sort of think, actually, God, you're right. No one's going to, who's going to care about this? I'm just waffling.
Miranda, I have a question. You have sort of categorized your books, the Do books, into smart working and lifestyle. Is that right? And life skills. Sorry, is any particular like that? You know, like of those two genres, more popular than others?
Yeah, probably the smart working books actually, right. And I think that's largely our sort of core audience. Try to sort of improve or change the way they work. Different ideas in that space, but also that could be about teams or leadership or, you know, purpose or all of those things. The life skills, it's kind of, having said that, it's kind of 50-50, because we did a book called Do Sourdough, which was one of the first, which was very niche, and it was because it was one of the first books just on making sourdough. Before that, you had big hardbacks that were all the breads, you know, all the breads in one big hardback, and it cost about £30, whatever. And this was one of the first books. It was a small format paperback just on sourdough. And it kind of straight out the gate, it started selling. And then in the pandemic, it was like, oh, what did everyone do? They learned how to make sourdough. I mean, we were so exhausted by the end of that year, but because of course there were no shops, so we were like selling direct.
Yes.
Yeah, anyway, it was dreadful. Well, it was kind of good and bad. The other book we did was called Do Pause, subtitle, You Are Not a To-Do List. And I will credit David Hart with coming up with that subtitle publicly. Mostly I'll come up with them, but that one we're really struggling. And then he just came out with that and I was like, done. You know, going on. That we classed as a sort of one of the lifestyle, life skills books. And that did really well. And I think that was by and large the title. What I was saying earlier about the how you present a book. We could have presented that book as a mindfulness book, you know, with the sun coming up on the cover or a sun lounger, you know, a little palm tree. But actually it just had, and also I should mention, you know, James Victoria, who does all our covers, you know, which are incredibly eye-catching and, you know, really stand out on the bookshelf. And I think all of those elements, it felt very relevant and timely, you know.
I haven't read that one. I'm going to get it.
Oh, you should. Oh, that's, yeah, it's a good one. It's just building in moments of pause into your life, you know.
It
could be 3 seconds, yeah. Or it could be a sabbatical. Yeah. Maybe you want the sabbatical.
I think I want the sabbatical. I've already had a sabbatical. It's interesting, and it's interesting that you do acknowledge, David, for that byline. Chris and I obviously have lots of banter about our bylines. But I think the best after the four years that we've been working together was his titling of David as the genius, spelt with a J.
Oh, that was very good. That was so good.
And I thought, someone's...
Was that you?
That was Chris. Yeah. I thought... Chris, I thought, surely someone's called him that before, and no one's called him that. So it's like...
I thought that. Surely that's come up before. No, I thought that was great. Yeah. You'll see that on his LinkedIn profile soon.
I'm delighted to contribute that. Miranda, yeah. I wonder if I could ask you, on behalf of Paul and I, for some advice.
Yes.
And it's this, and I think you're the perfect person. So we've got over 100 episodes under our belts now. And, of course, we're thinking about the book of the film of the Common Creative.
Oh, yes.
And the sort of easy thing to do is basically write up each podcast, and it'll just be a boring 1,000-page encyclopedia. How do you take a series of apparently disparate things and turn it into a book that has a theme? That, any tips on writing a book based on the chunks of content that we've got?
Yeah. I mean, so you could do, I mean, we've just done, because we've just celebrated our sort of 10-year milestone. And I thought, well, actually, I want to do a bigger book around that. So we did a sort of greatest hits, which was an anthology. So you could do a similar thing whereby you're taking, and you won't need to do, you wouldn't do transcripts anyway. I mean, that's where you'd put on your editor's hat, Chris.
Yes, yes.
And, yeah. You know, and pull out the salient points, you know, or the most profound moments, or, you know. So you're sort of distilling again down each guest or speakers, you know, well, what are they really, you know, what are they passionate about? What are they, well, their best bits of advice, really. But there would definitely be a book there. But you would want, again, to think of your reader. Why do they care about this? What are they going to get out of it? How is it going to help? So it's kind of the essence of your podcast, you know. Why are we doing the podcast? Who are we trying to help here? So it's a similar mindset going into producing a book.
Is your anthology, is that Stay Curious or is that the Book of Do?
It's the Book of Do, Manual for Living. Yeah. Yeah. That was a lot of, I know we keep saying it's a lot of fun. It's actually also a lot of work. We distribute in Australia through, Perimeter Books in Melbourne. I have to give them a shout out because they're so great. And they get us into all the museum and gallery stores. And we've been working with them for 10 years. And they're an art publisher. You know, they do a lot of high-end art and photography books. But they took us on. And they realised that our books are, you know, just as likely to get into the gallery shops. And they're more likely to be bought because they're a third of the price. So, but also because we've got, when you put the collection all together and they've got, you know, all of James Victory's artworks on the front, it does look like a little exhibition.
His work is fantastic, you know? And it's so simple. You know, and it's just for the listeners, the Do Pause is just two lines, which obviously is the pause button on a playing device. Yeah. And so so simple. And I love his Story, which is a little speaking bubble, but a fire coming out of it.
I mean, it's so good. I mean, you know, you say simple and they look simple. And I freaked out when, you know, that was a big moment actually in terms of the business was when, well, what's our identity going to be? And I spoke to a couple of designers and they were really trying to sort of capture that Do, you know, the wholesome feel of Do. You know, it's the food, locally sourced organic food, it's, you know, the farm and all of those lovely, the rustic nature, the campfires. And then I spoke to James Victory because somebody said, well, these are going to be small books. They're going to have to pack a punch and stand out in the bookshop. And so I sort of briefed him. We had this deal. I don't know if you're aware of this story, how we work. I work with a lot of creatives, and that's a whole other episode. Working with creatives.
Yes.
We'll get into that another day.
Well, you've got people with the common creator written on their t-shirts.
Well, some people can't and others can't, you know. I mean, there's a, you know, they need space, you know, and I need space to do their thing and trust and all those sorts of things. You can't, you know, you can't try and box in or contain a creative if you're, you know, you're working with them. Went to James because I thought his style is so in your face and that's what we need. And he's American, you know, he's got moustache, he rides a motorbike, wears a cowboy hat. And I was obviously slightly nervous approaching him. And at the time, he had some big clients like Jack Daniels, MailChimp. And he was top of his game. And I was like, well, we don't have, you know, we're starting out. We really don't have any money, but I will pay you. I pay everybody. But it might not be aligned with, you know, the sort of budgets that you're used to. Anyway, he agreed. I mean, actually, what I was offering was standard. Industry standard kind of thing, but I kind of thought, oh, he's going to want thousands and thousands. Anyway, he agreed on one condition, that he had full creative control, which basically meant that there wasn't that back and forth, to and fro, can you change, you know, I don't like the red. I want that campfire in the middle to be a bit more orange, you know. So I was like, actually, do you know what? I had so much to do starting the business, getting the business up and running. There's all these other elements that you never really think about when you're doing that. And I thought, do you know what? Actually, just, yeah, let's let him go and just see what he comes up with. Anyway, he sent over the first five designs and it was just such a moment. First of all, back then, one thing you didn't do was design a book cover with a white background, because we had Amazon and the white book covers would all just be floating.
Yeah,
you know.
Yes.
So then you had to put this god-awful little, you know, frame around it, or you tint. I mean, we actually tint the covers now for online retailers, because they've all got white backgrounds and you just have the sort of title and artwork looming out. They came in, they were all white backgrounds. And then I thought, to your point, Paul, about the covers being simple, the Do Grow cover was literally a crayon with just the grass. And I thought, oh God, who hasn't even done it? His child's done this. This is awful. And I was so like, and it was such a huge part. Our series identity was such a huge part of what we were doing. And I was committed at that point. I'd commissioned books. You know, it is such a moment of, I mean, it was literally in free fall. And actually I sent them to David, and because we work very independently, I do the books, he does the lectures, but we speak, like, you know, every week, once a week, once a fortnight, what have you. Not even about publishing, just about stuff. And I was like, what do you think? And he was like, let's sleep on it. And it was like the right thing to say, because I was obviously freaking out. And then we left it. And every day that we left it, we both loved the covers more and more. By about day three, I rang him and I was like, I think I really love them. I think I love them. I think I'm in love with them. And we went with it. And of course, he was right. So actually, I remind myself of that. Every time a cover comes in that I'm not quite, might not be, it's never what I expected anyway. There's always an element of surprise. But, you know, I'm working with an artist and he's done it for a reason. And, you know, he loves also that I trust him to do his, as he says, his best work.
Yep.
Because he knows I'm not going to change it. I've proven that. I literally will print what he sends in, unless it's got a rude word on the front or something. But that inspires him to kind of up his game and produce his best work. And he signs the front covers. So for him, it is like a miniature piece of art.
Yeah, I can see his thing. I never noticed that before.
And they've all been great.
Yeah, no, it's actually fantastic. And it really is it's an interesting observation on collaboration, because, you know, sometimes I have a word called collaboration, which is not collaboration. But, you know, but sometimes a great collaboration, you have to go, you know, you have to accept someone else's expertise. I occasionally do commissions for paintings, and I have one very good friend who sends me notes. I paint wet and wet, so it's very hard to go back and redo something. But it's really curious, yeah. And I love this thing that, you know, it's just, and I love the old thing about the grass, because yeah. I worked for a guy once who was sued. The architect sued. Sorry, but architect by profession sued this guy for not paying, yeah. And this guy's defense yeah. was that it was done freehand. And he said, "And Your Honor, he never even used a ruler." So I love that. I love that thing that you're sort yeah. of saying about, you know, like his kid did it. You know, it's just a squiggle. You know, what the hell? You know, that's but yeah.
For me, there's a lovely lesson we can all learn, which is that if you see something new and different, your first reaction will be not the instant acceptance because you haven't seen it before. But then if you want to be creative, you want something new, it's bound to be different from what you've seen before. And so that idea, sleep on it, wait, let it infuse into your system. Don't judge yeah. it straight away. I think that's a really powerful lesson.
Yeah, And also, you know, people are chasing different all the time. You know, people want to be different, but then when they're confronting with something different, they sort of back away. I do feel duty-bound to say that actually James is the one I described, and I thought his child had done it, which they hadn't, of the grasses, was of course perfect as well, because the book that went with was Do Grow, and it was Start with 10 Simple Vegetables by Alice Holden. And I thought, and actually that is a starting point.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he was showing a starting point of growing. You know, and it's this very sort of crude, childlike, and it's like, it might look like a mistake, it might not be, but that's how you start the process of something.
Yeah.
You know, with a, you know, rough sketch or something.
Yeah.
So that was me slightly underestimating and bringing all of my, oh, it's too much like that, but actually it's keeping an open mind and just trusting, you know, the artist, and it's like, yeah, okay, he knows what he's doing. Trust the driver.
Miranda, unfortunately, we've run out of time, but I maybe just got to get on and have a chat about, you know, working with creatives, because I'd love to hear more of that, because Chris and I, you know, whilst we work in this space, are both also creatives, so we'd like to take your view of it. Look, thank you for your insights. They are fantastic books, and we will put a link at the end in the show notes and at the end as well. So, look, thanks for your time today. It's been fantastic. Great fun chatting with you.
Oh, thank you. It's been really enjoyable, honestly. And that went, I feel like we were talking for about 5 minutes.
Thank you very much indeed.
That was great, Chris. It's a shame we don't have longer episodes, because I think we were just only warming up. And that insight into working with Victor about how he had total creative control is a fantastic lesson, and to us all, I think, but particularly for any creatives about who are collaborating, that sometimes you just have to trust the other person.
I was also struck by what she said up front about the role of books. Books are a personal connection with the author. You're not overloaded with information. And it's fascinating, isn't it? Technology hasn't found anything better than a book. You need words on a printed page. There's some magic in that. And it sort of inspired me more than ever that maybe everyone should write a book as an expression of themselves and a way of kind of connecting one-on-one with their readers.
And look, we've got some advice, literally from the horse's mouth of one of the most successful publishers in the world, about our upcoming book, Chris. So that was an added bonus that we got. So if you enjoyed the episode, please leave us a rating, preferably five, and a comment below.
And we hope you'll join us for next week's episode on The Common Creative. We'll see you soon.
Ciao for now.